Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. From good to bored to great. A lot of people quit when they're tired. An entrepreneur should only quit when they're done. Oren Claff, founder of Intersection Capital and author of Pitch Anything. Now, the ability to not quit when you are tired, bored, upset, defeated, broke, stumped, or exhausted to the point of not being able to get out of bed will be the defining characteristic for whether or not you build a business that changes your life and the lives of others. You can only quit when you are done. That is an excerpt from my brand new Amazon bestseller, Hack the Entrepreneur, How to Stop Procrastinating, Build a Business, and Do Work That Matters. To get the rest of Oren's chapter and 49 others by brilliant, brilliant entrepreneurs, go to htebook.com right now, or go straight to Amazon and look up Hack the Entrepreneur.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a radio journalist, former producer for public radio and television, and he is an entrepreneur. From 1999 to 2014, he was the producer of the public radio show, This American Life. He was also the co-creator and co-host of Planet Money, one of my favorite podcasts of all time. In 2014, my guest made the crazy decision to leave public radio and start a podcast company, Gimlet Media, and their first podcast startup. Later that year, Gimlet received $1.5 million in seed funding and went on to become a runaway podcasting success. In 2015, Gimlet received another round of funding, this time their Series A, at an additional $6 million. Now, let's hack Alex Bloomberg. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Fizzle, honest online business training for aspiring entrepreneurs. Have you ever had a day at the office when you wondered what it would be like to have the freedom to work when and where you want and to do the work that actually matters to you? When the thought first enters your mind, it might seem impossible. Freedom and doing work that you believe in? Nah, doesn't seem to work. But what if you had a step-by-step plan to build a business that would give you both freedom and purpose? That's why Fizzle exists. Fizzle is the very best place on the web to learn and build an independent business from scratch. And an independent business might be the very best way to earn a living doing something you care about. To help you get started, visit fizzle.co/hack to get 5 weeks of in-depth training on how to build an independent business from scratch for free. That's fizzle.co. Or is that fizzle.co? Either way, it's fizzle.co/hack. And as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you'll get 5 weeks of training for free. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very special guest. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Absolutely my pleasure. Alex, let's jump straight into this.
Uh-huh.
Alex, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Edit, I guess. I think it's funny. I was talking to somebody, a colleague of mine at NPR, who I used to work with at NPR, and we had worked on this big project. I used to do a thing called, do a show called Planet Money. I was a co-founder of that along with my colleague, Adam Davidson. And that was a NPR podcast that became very popular. And we did this big project where we followed a t-shirt around the world as it got made. And we did this big online extravaganza about it. Like, we had videos and audio, and it was great. It was very successful. We won an Emmy for it. And I was talking to, and that was a couple of years ago. And I was talking to one of the people that we worked on with that. And she was, and we were sort of like reminiscing about all the stuff that went into making that project. And she comes from the digital side. And she was like, yeah, we user tested it. Like, we put it in front of people and we got them to respond to it. And I was thinking, yeah, I guess in my world, we call that editing, but it's the same thing. You know, it's sort of putting it in front of a bunch of people, letting them take a crack at, letting them listen to it and you know, sort of give you feedback. And it's something that was very important at This American Life. It was very important at Planet Money. And I think it's what makes, it's what you need to do to make anything good. You can't just sort of turn it over to somebody and expect like they're just going to, I think a lot of people think that you can just give it to somebody and then they make it and then it's great. And then when they don't make it great, like they're the wrong person and you got to find the right person. And we don't feel that way. We feel like it takes a team of dedicated people making something great, and a lot of what, and you need to be sort of continuously editing each other and presenting cuts and for people to review and editing.
Would that also, I guess, involve like not, I guess, not holding your original maybe vision or ideas too dearly because they might end up on the cutting room floor?
It's interesting. You know, I mean, it's hard because you want to, normally I would have said that media and tech are very different, but the more I get into this, the more I think that they're not that different. And the place where they're the same is in, they both rely on artful execution. You know, there was a bunch of mobile photo sharing apps that came along, and Instagram became the preeminent one because it just did it better. There's been a bunch of messaging, workplace productivity apps that have come along, but Slack is winning because they just do it better. And doing it better doesn't mean that they have this bold new idea. Doing it better means that they're paying attention to every single little detail and the things that you don't even notice as a user. What you find is sort of like, oh, this is, I just like it better. It feels better. It's easier. It's not annoying me. And so somebody with a vision needs to be there, but they also need to know what's, you know, when their vision isn't working and what needs to, they need to know that like what they're trying to, they need to be, their vision needs to be flexible, but it needs to be there. So it's this weird dance. Like the more I get into this stuff, the more paradoxical everything I say seems. I feel more and more like some sort of weird Zen master or something like that. But it is, you need both things. You need a really, really strong vision. And then you also need a lot of flexibility.
Yeah. And so you mentioned Slack, right? And doing it better and how you as the user might not even notice a difference, but it is there. Or else it's been probably, as you're saying, it's been edited and removed, actually. That's the thing that was.
Yeah. And podcasts are the same way. Like people, I don't think they're going to notice that like we took out that dependent clause, you know, in that interview that sort of like slightly threw off the line of argument that the person was making. And that was something that we argued over for a lot, you know, for like, you know, several minutes in an edit meeting. And then we finally decided to do it. Like you as a listener aren't even going to know that happened. Hopefully what you as a listener know is that like, you're engaged and you are, this podcast is just feeling like a little bit more forceful or more narratively driven or more interesting or, you know, has less flab in it than other podcasts that you listen to. And so that's that. And that's the bet we're making that will help us succeed.
Seems like it's working out so far.
So far it's working out.
So summer of 2014, you quit public radio in what you admitted yourself was a sort of a crazy move. And you started a podcasting company.
Yeah.
Possibly the first one called Gimlet Media that got funding. And now, as you said, just got like another $6 million now in Series A. Mm. And it's massive. You guys have had some huge hits. Would you, if you could go back, everything else being the same right now, would you do that again, do you think? Would you leave public radio?
Absolutely. Yeah, no question about it. This was absolutely the right decision. Absolutely. Yeah. It feels like, more and more, it feels like the right decision.
Really nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. So there's not one of those mornings where you wake up and just, I wish I wasn't in charge of all of this again.
No. I mean, I like being in charge. Being in charge is hard. And like, it's only going to get harder as like the organization gets bigger and like what I'm going to have to learn a lot of new skills, I think, to manage bigger and bigger organizations. But first of all, like I think we're creating a lot of value and, you know, I own a lot of that value. So that's nice. You know, that's like, there's something to that. But honestly, like financially, like things are, you know, not quite as good as they were before I quit. They started out very much worse than they were before I quit. And then they've slowly been getting themselves, slowly getting almost back to where I was before I quit in terms of sort of my own personal earning. But obviously the thing that I'm sitting on top of is much more valuable. So like, you know, if there ever is an exit, like that would be that would be very different. You know, put me in a different category, just personally. But more to the point, it's like, I don't know. Like I'm just like, the reason I left had to do with like the work. You know, what kinds of shows were out there? What kinds of shows felt possible? And it was just to me, it felt like, oh, there's so much more that people can be doing. And we're seeing that more and more every day, like new different kinds of podcasts come out every single day. We're putting out a bunch of different kinds of podcasts. We have a bunch more coming out this year that are really new and really, I think, going to be really groundbreaking. And it's just great to be in the center of that. Like, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. If I was still in public radio and sort of watching this happen and seeing how easy it is happening somewhere else and seeing how hard it is to happen at some of these legacy organizations, I would just be like pulling my hair out. I'd be so frustrated. So no, I mean, all the things that drove me to leave are even stronger now. Like now there's a bigger pull even in the direction of what we're doing.
Yeah. And it's, so you, it would have had to have been for the work, because you even admit that it wasn't financially the smartest.
Yeah.
Or it didn't make sense, right?
It wasn't, short term, it was financially disastrous. Long term, it was probably financially much riskier than I was letting myself imagine at the time. You know, at this point, like, we have like some hope that like the financial risk we took will at some point pay off. Obviously, like, it's impossible to say still, but you know, it feels like a little bit of a safer bet, if not entirely a safe bet. And part of like the reason I left was because I felt like I was creating these things that were valuable in the world, both, you know, both from an artistic standpoint, from the value that people were receiving from them standpoint, but also from a financial standpoint. Like Planet Money, you know, it had a very large audience and was doing really great award-winning work. More and more people were coming to listen to it every single week. And it just wasn't producing very much money. And it felt like to me that like if we did the same kind of thing in a different organization where the organization was a little bit more set up to deliver financial returns as well, like that, you could actually, the financial value could be as much as the other kinds of value that it was delivering. And that's proven to be totally true. Like once I partnered with my co-founder, Matt, who has, you know, who's just a really savvy business guy who understands this stuff in a way that I don't at all. And we've been very successful at monetizing in a way that like nowhere at my old jobs were they able to.
Yeah. And how were you shocked, or how shocked were you with the almost immediate success of Startup, your very first show as it comes out of the gate? I mean, coming from obviously Planet Money and This American Life, you obviously must have had a real confidence that you knew what you were doing. But did you think that you had it in you to just like, first off, here we go, hit. It's time for a hit. Let's do it.
It's funny. Like I didn't, that was the thing that I felt. I didn't feel like, I wouldn't say that I felt sure about it, but that was the thing that I had, that I felt confident in myself to be able to at least deliver. Like I knew my career had been long enough and I'd done it enough that I knew how to tell a story in audio. You know, that was the one thing that I was like confident. That was the one ability that I had that I was confident in. Like, what are you, you know, like the various, that felt like one of the less risky parts of this whole thing is like being able to tell a good story. And I don't want to minimize how much work went into doing that and all the people that listened to the first episode and gave me great feedback on it. And it was like, you know, it was like months, you know, sort of putting that thing together and rewriting and rewriting and rewriting. So it's not like, but at least I knew that process and I knew how to run that process and I knew how to bring that process to a successful conclusion. What I wasn't sure about at all was how many listeners we would get out of the gate and how much revenue we'd be able to generate from advertising. And in fact, when Matt and I had first sort of made these models in the beginning, it turns out we way underestimated both the audience sizes and the amounts of money we would be able to generate.
Fair enough. Because you also minimized in your head the risk involved. So it all kind of works out then.
Yeah. So, I mean, we just, that was less tested. Like we didn't know, you know, we knew like what CPMs were at the time, which is like sort of the rates that people pay for advertising on podcasts. We knew what those rates were. And we had no reason. It would have been insane to sort of like put in, like to think like, okay, well, this is what the rates are, but we're going to get three times those rates and we're going to get 10 times the audience we're expecting. Like we just, it would have been crazy to think that. So we didn't put that in our models quite like, you know, quite wisely. And then lo and behold, it turned out that's sort of what happened. We were just able to monetize much better than we thought.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Okay. We're going to move to work if we can, Alex.
Yeah.
So at the beginning, you said your one thing is the ability to edit.
Yeah.
And now every expert talks about the 80-20 rule. So in business, you're supposed to do 20% of the work, get 80% of the results. You're supposed to do what you're good at. You're supposed to delegate the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Alex, could you tell me something that you're absolutely not good at within your business?
Oh, I mean, where to start? I'm definitely not good at, well, that's, so partly that's what makes my partnership with Matt so great, is that like, I think we really complement each other well and sort of what our strengths and weaknesses are. So I'm good at editing. I'm good at sort of seeing my way through a story. I'm good at being, at trying to inspire people to want to create, you know, exciting, good, new stuff. I'm bad at time management. I'm bad at doing deals. I'm just like business-wise, like I'm not really on any calls anymore, any business calls, because I'm bad at negotiating. I'm bad at like understanding even what's happening in a negotiation. So, I mean, you know, when I very first started this company, Matt and I hadn't met. And so I was thinking that I was going to do it on my own, and I didn't get anywhere. I didn't get anybody to write a check. I didn't get anybody to, because I wasn't coming across, I wasn't making the sale. I wasn't closing. And then Matt joined, and he's just great at closing. He's great at it. You know, he's great. I'm also really bad at sort of thinking long term and imagining what the future is going to look like, you know, once things have changed. So, and again, Matt's really good at that. He's really good at planning for the future and sort of imagining like sort of, okay, here's where we are now, given all these, you know, given trends, what they are, like we can expect that we'll be at this point later. And so that means that we're going to be growing out of our office. So we have to get a new office. And that means we're going to need to raise more money. So we should raise more money. You know, all these things that Matt is really good at, I'm not good at all.
Nice.
Yeah.
And like, it's interesting. You said you didn't even have this thought of having like a co-founder or really a business sort of model as you went into it. So Matt must have approached you, and you say that he's really good at closing deals. Did he close the deal to actually become a co-founder of Gimlet?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, we did a whole episode of Startup about this where we actually recorded our equity negotiation. So it all happened on tape. And you can listen, it's like, I think it's the third episode in season one. And yeah, I mean, I felt at the time, like, I was like, oh man, you've gone to business school, you've taken negotiation classes. I don't know what I'm doing, but you know, that's okay too. You know what I mean? I think that like, I can't imagine like having done what we were talking about doing and not having arrived at the equity split we arrived at. Like, to me, it feels like very, very, it feels like, you know, we're fully invested in our partnership, and we're fully invested equally in this company, and it was absolutely the right way for it to all come out.
Nice.
So I'm glad that he, I don't know. And I don't think he thought of it as like, sort of like, I'm going to negotiate this. I think he just thought of it as like, this is what feels fair to me. And like, I want to talk about that. He's good at talking about that though. He's good at sort of like listening to what you're saying and then sort of like coming back with what he says. I try to like apologize too much and glad hand. I don't know. I'm just like, he's just very straightforward. It's good. He's really great at this stuff. I've learned so much being at meetings with him and watching him operate.
Nice. I love it. And how have you noticed, or are you aware of the fact of how your life, like work life sort of balance, may have shifted from running your own company that's growing incredibly fast to from coming from public media?
It's funny. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where like, it can't shift that much just because that's my priority. So, you know, I'm not going to not see my kids, and I'm not going to like, you know, I have to come home and like, mm-hmm. you know, the babysitter has to go home. You know what I mean? Like, we're not that kind of family where that can't happen. So those parameters seem pretty firm. And so in a way it's been like, I've just had to incorporate them into my life, which is great. You know, and in a way it's nice. In a way it like it enforces like a discipline on me that I'm not going to try to take home everything and do it myself. I think a lot of times when entrepreneurs take everything home with them, I don't know who the hell knows. I don't know how it works in other places. I'm like, I'm such a fake entrepreneur advice giver. Sorry, audience. But seriously, for like, don't, you know, I, for 40 years or whatever, you know, for 20 years, I worked in public media, and then I've like been running a company for a year and a half. So, you know, take my advice with a grain of salt. But I think that like a lot of times the instinct is like, I'm just going to learn how to do it myself. And I'm going to learn how to do the things that I'm not good at myself, just because I'm an entrepreneur and I'm running my company and that's how you do it. And so it's just like, it's not very efficient. you know, sort of working all the time isn't very efficient, actually. And so what this does is it forces me to sort of like prioritize, like, here are the things that I'm good at and very efficient at. I'm very efficient in an edit. I can edit things faster than other people. I know what the problems are quicker. I can diagnose them quicker. I can bring people onto the same page quicker. Like, that's something that I've gotten very good at. So that's something I should be doing. I shouldn't be building out our financial models. I shouldn't be, or our financial forecasts. I shouldn't be negotiating leases. You know, all the things that I shouldn't be doing, I don't do now because of these parameters that have been, that have been put up in my life. And I'm not even tempted to, because there's just no chance that I can do it. So it's just nice. It's focusing.
Yeah. And that's a great answer. And I think that your advice does really hold, because you came from public media. And that's why, especially with, as you said, the financial side not being there, sometimes that puts people into panic mode. And so then office work then comes home and you're with your kids, but you're with your laptop, you're working, you're doing, and it's not efficient. It doesn't make sense,
yeah.
But it doesn't mean you don't do it.
Yeah, exactly. And, I'm occasionally, something big and upsetting happens at work. I'm going to be distracted from my children. Like, that happens. But it really, I am forced to prioritize and I'm forced to delegate because of my family. And for that, it's like, it's definitely like a blessing.
Nice.
Yeah. And it also, like, I don't know, it also like puts things in perspective in a nice way. Like, it would be perhaps more terrifying to do this without a family in a weird way, because everything would be riding on the business. Whereas now, the business is the second most important thing in my life after my family, instead of the most important thing in my life. And in a way that feels somewhat healthy. That's probably the way it should be.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. Most people think of it as having the family as well puts extra pressure on you, because the success of the business, they feel their family's like livelihood is riding on that.
Yeah, and I see that. And I feel like it would be, if this business were to fail, and it would be financially problematic for our family. But I also feel like both my wife and I are, we're professionals with like valuable skills, and like, if we have to get more other jobs, we can get other jobs. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, it doesn't seem like to me that like we're gonna, knock on wood, I don't think we're gonna be homeless.
Yeah, I don't think Alex Bloomberg is gonna go without a job if he's looking for one.
Yeah,
I have this.
But in this weird way, that's sort of where I anchor. Like, I'm sort of like, I don't know. For a long time, we used to joke at This American Life, like, if you had to go back, like, what's your fallback? Like, if this whole thing, and this was like at the point where like This American Life was successful, we'd done a TV show run, but every once in a while, I'd sit and talk with Julie Snyder, the executive producer of Serial, she and I would be like, okay, so if the whole thing blows up, what's your fallback job? And she would be like, waitress. And I would be like, elementary school teacher. Which is actually not true, because like elementary school teacher is like a really, really hard job. And like, it actually takes a lot of skill. And I was like crazy to even think that. So actually, if I had to think about it, it would actually probably be busboy.
Be busboy, nice.
Because I never actually made it to waiter. I was only just a busboy. I never got good enough to be a waiter.
That's fair enough. All right, Alex, we're going to move to projects. So projects, for the most part, is like a loose term, but I would love to know, with a podcasting company, with a new show coming online, I would love to know what it is, the process that you go through now, either you personally or as a company, determining when a show is the right idea to put your time, energy, and resources into.
Yeah, I mean, so up until now, it's been sort of like we're shifting into a new phase. Up until now, it's been a lot of like, oh, that seems cool, let's do that. Or, oh, you want to work with us? That seems great. And it's been sort of like, we haven't really had a process. We've had like the kind of process that I always have, which is sort of like a gut instinct process where it feels right or it doesn't feel right, which, I think your gut's valuable. But I feel like going forward, I don't think that can be the way we make decisions about what projects we take on and don't take on. But I think my plan for this year is, we have a bunch of projects that are underway that we have already that we've committed to and we're pretty excited about. And I want to see what those projects do this year, see how they perform, see, how they're embraced, see how they grow. And we're testing a bunch of different segments of the market with these projects. And I think that's going to do a lot to sort of help inform us on what are the kinds of things that we want to do. But to answer your question specifically, like, when we think about a new project, we're thinking about a number, like, podcasting works for a number of reasons. I think one, it gives people companionship. So people listen to podcasts for companionship, right? They hang out, they feel like they're hanging out with friends. Two, they listen because it gives them sort of actionable information. They learn something. They learn something about their business, how to run their business. They learn something about the world. And so you see a lot of really popular podcasts are sort of, you know, delivering that, you know, podcasts like Stuff You Should Know, you know, I think Happier with Gretchen Rubin, this, the podcast on the Panoply Network, like it's sort of like how to improve your life, how to learn some stuff while you're on your commute. And then the third big thing is that like podcasts are really good at narrative. They're just good at sort of telling people a story. And so a lot of the fiction podcast, like The Limetown, that was a great fiction podcast that came out, and, you know, like The Moth and a bunch of those. And then a lot of podcasts sort of combine two or three of those elements. So if you think about Radiolab, it combines like all three, really. It combines like the storytelling with the information, like you're learning something and you like get to hang out with Jad and Robert, who you sort of like have a relationship with, and that's sort of fun. This American Life is the same way. And so we deliberately try to build our shows that at least two of those three things we're delivering on. We're giving you either information and companionship, or we're telling you a story with information, or, you know, those are the three things that we're trying to go for.
Wow. That's awesome. So companionship, learning, and then the storytelling narrative.
Yeah.
And if you can get two of those things.
Yeah. Then you're at least using the medium to most of its capability.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I love it. Well, Alex, this has been an absolute blast. I want to wrap up on one final question for you.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you've come a long ways from a freelance journalist through This American Life, through creating Planet Money, which is obviously an amazing show and podcast. Then that didn't seem to quite be enough for you. So you went and created Gimlet Media and startup, and you've now turned that into a great success. But oftentimes you might find this now or in the future, that as an entrepreneur, we often always are projecting our success into the future. Meaning when you hit that metric in 1 month or in 3 months, or when that next show is a hit in 6 months, that's when you'll be successful. Yet right before you hit that, you set loftier goals into the future. And sometimes we live in this gap where success is always somewhere in the future and we're never quite there no matter what we achieve. I would love right now, Alex, if you could stop, turn around, look behind you, see everything you've come from, the wins, the losses, the highs, the lows, and tell me how you feel about your career up until today.
Oh, I feel awesome about my career. I had such low expectations for myself coming out of college. And like most of my 20s were spent sort of like bumping around and like doing things that I wasn't sure that were the right things for me to do, and being sort of like, you know, employed in very, very low paying jobs that didn't give me a lot of like everything on top of that. Like once I started working at This American Life, like pretty much on top of that has been gravy. It's been amazing. You know, I mean, I feel like it's been just sort of like a procession of dream job after dream job. And I'm not one of these people who's been, it was a struggle for me. It was a struggle for me to feel brave about taking, you know, professional leaps. And it was a struggle for me to believe in myself to things that I thought would be, you know, personal reward. And it wasn't until like my 30s that I, you know, got up the courage to even do that. And so once I did, and sort of started happening for me, I've never forgotten that. I've never forgotten like the me that could have been if I hadn't taken that leap, and how just sort of frustrated and dissatisfied I'd be in my life. And so I'm always comparing what I have now to what might have been if I'd never gotten off my ass and tried to do something. And it makes me feel really fortunate to be where I am.
That's awesome. That's a beautiful answer. The me that could have been.
Yeah.
That's all you have to think.
It's a scary me.
I love that. All right. This has been an absolute blast, Alex. We've talked about Gimlet and startup in passing, but could you specifically tell the listener where to go find out more about you?
Yeah. So we have 5 podcasts up and running right now. We're at gimletmedia.com. That's our website. You can also find all of our podcasts on iTunes. They are Startup, Reply All, Mystery Show, Surprisingly Awesome, and our latest, greatest Sampler, which just launched. I'm really super excited about that.
Excellent. Excellent. I'll link to all those in the show notes for everyone. And Alex is also on Twitter fairly actively.
Yes. @AvexLumberg.
Excellent. I will link to that in the show notes as well. So thanks so much, Alex, for joining me. Thanks for taking the time. Thanks for all that you do just in the media and podcasting world. We really do appreciate it. And yeah, just please keep doing what you're doing, Alex, because it really is awesome to watch.
Thanks. Thanks so much, John. It was really fun.
Well, that was a lot of fun. Thank you, Alex, for joining me. And thank you out there listening for putting up with that last couple of minutes. Alex kept dropping in and out We ended up having a terrible connection that was great at the beginning and then at the end. And it was, he was in the flow of answering and I couldn't disturb him. And then we tried our best to make it up and make it as listenable as possible. But this is kind of the nature of the beast. So I do apologize for that. And yeah, we'll try not to do that to you again. But wasn't that an awesome conversation? Alex is a smart, smart guy. And I love the transition just in the last year and a half into running a private company rather than working in public media. So that's why I really found this interesting. Plus, I got to geek out podcasting style with one of the creators of Planet Money, one of my favorite time shows of all time. So that doesn't hurt either. So I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. So I went back through the conversation, like I always do, and Alex said some really, really insightful, some really, really interesting, and some points that really kind of hit home with me. So I went back through, and there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 things at the beginning that I had to go back and listen to. And I went through, and I got those down to 4. Then I got it down to 3. Then the last time, there was 2. And now there's 1. There's this one thing that Alex said that I just couldn't get out of my head after hearing it again and again. And it's that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I'm not going to try to take home everything and do it myself. I think a lot of times when entrepreneurs take everything home with them, I don't know who the hell knows. I don't know how it works in other places. I'm such a fake entrepreneur advice giver. Sorry. Sorry, audience. But seriously, for like, don't, you know, I, for 40 years or whatever, you know, for 20 years, I worked in public media and then I've like been running a company for a year and a half. So, you know, take my advice with a grain of salt. But I think that like a lot of times the instinct is like, I'm just going to learn how to do it myself. And I'm going to learn how to do the things that I'm not good at myself just because I'm an entrepreneur and I'm running my company and that's how you do it. And so it's just like, it's not very efficient, you know, sort of working all the time isn't very efficient actually.
And that's the hack. Alex. First of all, I love the preface of I'm a fake entrepreneur advice giver because of working in public radio for 20 years. That was brilliant. And I appreciate your humbleness because you've taken Gimlet Media in a year and a half to something really, really big and it's going to go really cool places. And just the idea that, I mean, who cares where you came from? And I mean, it's not, we're not looking necessarily for advice where somebody, where Alex can just tell you do this or don't do this. We just want to know what you are up to. And I love the idea of not bringing your work home with you and the clarity of keeping the distinction between here's the things I'm good at, here's the things I'm not good at. Rather than spending all this time, and I'm going to do it myself because I'm this entrepreneur mindset, which Alex talks about, where sometimes it's false because we think we need to figure out and get better at the things that we aren't good at, rather than just we got to get rid of those things because we aren't good at them. And the things that we are good at, which we all are good at things, we need to just sort of emphasize those things and make those a bigger part of our day. Also, this whole idea of hustle and just working your butt off all the time, that is a huge thing in the entrepreneur space right now, can be wrong, is probably wrong. And as Alex says, it's just very inefficient to try and work all of the time. You need to step back. You need to have clarity. And when you think clearer, you work better, you work more efficiently, and you get more done in a shorter amount of time, which is better than working, say, 18 hours a day when it's not necessary. So Alex, I really, really appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you telling us how you are thinking and how you are working now as an entrepreneur. And even though you do humbly say that you are not the person and we should take it all with a grain of salt, I don't think that's true because you've done in a short span now some really, 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 really cool things. And I hope that you continue to do so. So that was a lot of fun. And I hope that you enjoyed that out there as much as I did. Make sure to stop by the website, hacktheentrepreneur.com, and get on to the email list. I think you'll like what we're doing over there. I think you really, really will. All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate so much you stopping by. I appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us today with Alex and I. I know you have a lot of options out there to listen to, and it's very cool that you spent this past half hour with Alex and I. With that said, until next time, please Keep hacking the entrepreneur.